Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we look back on the origins of the internet through the bulletin board system. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain. Over the past several podcasts, I've been talking about some of the retro projects that we've been doing here in the Hardware Asylum Labs, you know, refurbishing a 386, fixing a motherboard, putting together a 486 and a Pentium build, and, you know, fixing broken cases, just kind of some fun retro stuff.
Right.
And one aspect of that I really wanted to explore was kind of the early internet of the day.
Oh, okay. So like you're refurbing modems now?
No, not modems, because literally we cannot use a modem anymore, because one, we don't necessarily have dial-up internet, and some people don't actually have a landline in their house anymore.
Well, that's a good point.
So it makes it really hard to do dial-up. But back in the day when these computers were relevant, the internet was very, very new, still government controlled, and you couldn't actually just dial into it. So how did we exchange messages and download files and stuff like that? Because you really could do that.
Oh my gosh, that takes me way back. So you must be talking about IRC chat?
No, it was kind of an internet thing, I think.
No, okay, so before that...
Yeah, it's internet relay chat. It's actually in the name.
Well, all right, there is that. But, yeah. All right, let me go even further back then. So you're talking about BBSs then, right?
Yes, the bulletin board system. When I was on my Tandy, which is something I talked about on the podcast before, my Tandy 1000SX.
Right.
You know, it was the family computer, but since I was the only one, nerdy enough to know how to use it.
Internet savvy, maybe? Let's go with that.
It wasn't even the internet back then, right?
Dial-up savvy just doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I know, it's terrible. But I bought a modem off of, I would say Craigslist these days, but it was out of the classified ads. And it was funny, some college kid went and drove by the house and dropped it off. I gave him a few bucks and he ran off. I'm like, hey, I have a modem. This is awesome. But by putting a modem in that computer, I was able to dial other computers, and namely bulletin board systems. And with a bulletin board system, you could dial in, you create an account. Does this sound familiar? You create an account, and then once you're in there, then you could go to a message area, or you could go to a bulletin area, which is where the bulletin board came from, right? Which was a play on that bulletin board that you'd see when you walk into a grocery store, for instance.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Or at the college for us, right? Where you'd put your want ads and your, I don't know, get together.
Oh yeah. The togetherness posts, or the, hey, I have a couch, come buy it. Here's my phone number. Or, you know, that was where you post messages for people to respond to. And the idea is that the bulletin board is in a well-trafficked area that would attract people by, and they could see what was going on. You know, you go to the post office and in the back corner, you can still see a bulletin board, but a lot of times it just has America's Most Wanted or, you know, watch out for this guy because he'll shoot you sort of thing.
Right. I guess that makes sense.
So as you were dialing into the BBSs, you had games that you could play. You would have a message area where you could go and post messages and have conversations with people. Some of these systems had an email system where you could write a message and then it would get shipped off and then it'd be on, say, like the FidoNet or DoveNet or whatever. And those messages would go to all the BBSs that were subscribed to that particular network. And that was kind of a nightly thing. So the messages would kind of sit there, and then at night when nobody was dialing into the BBS, it would dial out and then share all those messages, download the new stuff. And that is how early email worked. In a way, it wasn't necessarily email like thisandthat.com, but it could have been some guy's BBS name /node/area/something. It was actually a really, really long address, but that was the node for that particular BBS on that network.
So I have to admit, I'm a little rusty on the old BBS thing because that is a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But can you actually still get onto a BBS without a dial-up?
Yeah, you can actually. And that's really what got me started into traveling down this road of trying to set up a BBS. It's like, well, are there still BBSs available? And it turns out that there are a good 2,000 or 3,000 of them still operating.
Oh, cool.
Now, they don't get a lot of traffic, much like they might have back in the 90s, because now they're internet enabled and a lot of people are on social media or YouTube or hardwareasylum.com. They have these places to go to get what it is that they happen to need. Whereas a BBS back in the day was its own little central hub. So it's kind of like dialing in, so to speak, hotmail.com. So at Hotmail, you can get your email. That's where your email address is. You can do your communications back and forth. When it was tied in with MSN.com or whatever, then you would also get your news. Some of the other examples, the good ones, in fact, were AOL.com. You know, in the early days of the internet, you would have AOL. CompuServe was a very popular one as well. And they all had this idea that you would dial in or connect to that service and then get everything you needed. Well, that idea came from a BBS back in the day when you would dial into it. So I thought it was interesting, and we can talk about this a little bit more, about how early BBSs really shaped the way that the internet was and how it is more so today.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because my earliest experiences with online gaming, for example, came from BBSs through Door Games.
Door Games were one of my earliest fond memories of a BBS. So you would dial in, and one of my favorite games was Operation Overkill, and it was kind of a post-apocalyptic sort of role-playing game where you would log in as a character, and as you leveled up, you could change some of your stats. You would go and find weapons and sell weapons and amass money by buying and selling stuff and killing monsters and trying not to die. The thing that made that game interesting is the fact that it wasn't a single player game. It was a multiplayer game. So as I was playing, I was the only one on the map at the time, but if I didn't save my game in the base or have a base or be in a back remote corner somewhere, one of the other players that might dial into the BBS could find me and kill me and take all my stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, because I think my fondest memories were from the warring version of the Door Games. And I think we should maybe point out why it's called a Door Game, because that's an odd term for folks that aren't familiar.
So the Door Game, as I understand it, was just kind of an add-on application.
So it'd be like a module you'd add on to your core BBS. It'd be kind of the same as saying, you know, you can log into Facebook today, and then you could click a side button on Facebook to open a Facebook game, which I don't want to give any ideas, but, you know, isn't too far from reality today. The term, I believe, and someone maybe will correct me in the comments, but was because you were opening a door to a different world or to a different experience. So don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's right.
And that kind of rings true, because we have a core subset of what a BBS was. And we could actually kind of go back to that. So we have, as I mentioned, you dial in, you create your account, you have these bulletins you could read, you had your email, and you had your message board. Anything beyond that was usually considered a door into something else. Some BBSs allowed you to download and upload files, and that's kind of how you shared things back and forth. And how I got a lot of the games that I played on my computer at the time was to dial into a BBS and then download this archive across 3 disks and then expand it and then recontract it. It was kind of a pain in the butt, but it was worth it because it gave me something new to play that was relatively free.
Yeah, the earliest days of file sharing and music sharing really came from BBSs.
It was kind of 8-bit music. It wasn't really like downloading, you know, the latest Lords of Acid sort of track, but...
Well, and that's a good point to make out, because I think folks, I mean, this is kind of like when we joke about when it used to be cool to have 1 megabit or megabyte or 2 megabytes in your computer and how that would be all we need, right? Mm-hmm. It was kind of a similar thing, because original internet was crazy slow. So if you wanted to download a floppy disk's worth of game, which back in those days was a pretty good game, it could take hours or even all night.
Yeah, that was insane. I mean, my modem wasn't terribly fast, so I had to be careful about what it is I downloaded, because again, these BBSs were, they had a quality of service associated with them. So when you dialed in, they would record when you dialed in and would monitor how long you were on for. So if you only were allowed 20 minutes online or on that BBS, you had to get everything done in those 20 minutes because it would boot you when you were done, even if you were in the middle of a file download. So that was something where you had to monitor what you did and how you did it. But luckily, like if you were doing emails and stuff, you would say, hey, give me my latest messages, and they would give you a package to download. And you download that package and you could view it offline, answer everything, and the next time you dialed in, it would auto-upload and then send your messages and stuff.
Yeah, bandwidth back in those days was very precious and very slow. Mm-hmm. So coming back to the door games, because I'm a little interested in that. I want to maybe tell a quick story, because back when I was in college and maybe the tail end of high school, we used to play the online war games. I'm trying to think of what they were. Mafia Wars was one of them, and there's...
It was like Pimp Wars, which is a variation of that.
Yeah, and basically they're all the same as kind of what you see in the phone games these days, where you're building up your resources, your ammo. Of course, back in those days, there was no pretty graphics. You just had...
It was text.
Numbers to manage. But you would build up your forces, and then you had, you know, maybe 5 turns in a calendar day. So you would, you know, build up your forces, train your troops, hire some folks, and then you could attack whichever players were virtually next to you. It was almost like when you play by mail games, which is really dating me probably.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible.
But I can still remember you'd get 2 or 3 of your buddies on the same BBS in the same game, and you'd wait till like 11:30, and then you'd do all your moves, and then you'd wait up until after midnight because the BBS would say it's another day, mm-hmm. and take a whole nother set of turns in a row. And that was how we used to cheat back in the days. So funny, because you get 2 turns in a row, and if you had 2 or 3 or 4 guys, you could wipe somebody else out before they even had a chance to log in and log a turn.
Yeah, it was balance, I guess. You know, because it really should be 24 hours from the last time you logged in, but as you mentioned, the BBS didn't really care. It just had these set of rules and it would follow it. Well, if it was the switchover was at midnight, then you just wait up a little bit and you could go and do it again.
Yeah, but there's a very addictive quality to that in a way that's not unlike modern phone games, the Candy Crushes and whatnot, because you take your turns and I'm going to also maybe go analog on it. It reminded me a lot of a good game of Risk, right? Because you'd log in and you'd pound on a player and push them all the way back, and then now you've used up both of your turns. Now you got to wait another full day to see what happens. In mm-hmm. the meantime, they might get their buddies and come and push you back. And so you'd wave back and forth and back and forth before eventually you could take a player out.
Yeah. And there was a message component within these games in some cases, where if you were playing with your friends, you could send a message saying, hey, I pushed them back to XYZ point. And then you could go in and attack them at that point as well. Now, the one thing I have noticed about some of these door games is that they all kind of follow the same patterns. So Operation Overkill, for instance, was kind of turn-based. So you would move around a map and then you might run into a monster, and then the fighting interaction was the same, and you would pick up their items, or the items might disintegrate or something like that. You take them back and sell them. There was another popular game. The shortcut name for it was Lord, but it was The Legend of the Red Dragon.
Oh yeah. Now that takes you back.
And that particular game was forest-based. It was kind of a medieval themed, so you go out into a forest. Well, the fighting mechanic was exactly the same. You go and encounter creatures in the forest, kill them, take your stuff, get experience points and gold, take it back to the base, and then you could level up your character. So a lot of those games really kind of followed that same mentality, but they did it in such a different way that it made it a unique experience, even though it was being played the same way. And that's something that some of the modern games really try to exploit, but I think they fail at.
Well, and that doesn't take into account that, you know, back in those days, you would buy a door software program, mm-hmm. like Operation Overkill or whatever, and you bought the license. So you could actually create content for that game, or mm-hmm. even what we call today a reskin if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. I think there was a map pack that I could download for Operation Overkill. It had 20 different maps. Some of them were created by the developer and some of them were fan created. And all you had to do is like swap it out in the game. So when you loaded it up, it would be your character in a different world. And then it would have a different layout. And
oh yeah.
It was kind of fun.
And we used to dread those resets, right? My work's going to be lost as they restart the server, which, mm-hmm. you know, ironically happens today in some of the multiplayer online games. So there's a lot of emulation there. In fact, you're not mistaken. A lot of what we see today in things like Facebook and even Yahoo Mail are really direct descendants of some of the BBS functionality.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was one thing I wanted to talk about, was as I was setting up a BBS and I downloaded SynchroNet, and that's one that is currently in development. So the guy, his name's Rob, he was the original developer for it, and he found that The backstory here is that he found the source code for a very popular BBS and then started modifying it. And then as his BBS became popular, people started saying, hey, I would like to implement this on my system. And so they would send him and saying, hey, so can you, you know, do this for me as well? And he got the crazy ideas. Well, maybe I'll just sell my BBS.
Sure.
And that's what created Synchronet and a company behind it so that he could publish it. Well, that lasted for, I don't know, 3 years until the internet really started to take off. And at that point, he rolled his BBS into open source software.
Wow.
And it's kind of as a hobby, keeps coming back and developing new features for it. Well, one of those features is the fact that he removed all of the COM interaction. So you don't have to dial into the BBS anymore. So now it's internet enabled. So you just log a Telnet session and you can connect to these BBSs. And they have nodes. That's how the interaction between the COM port and how you're supposed to connect to it really translates. So there's a node. So you can change however many nodes you have, and that dictates how many people can connect to the system at one time.
So we've made them sort of backwards compatible?
A little bit. And the system itself is largely the same as it was. So you have the message area, you have email capability, you have file up and load and download, you have a doors system where you can add door games or other applications. They don't have necessarily have to be a game. I think one of the applications for the door that's within Synchronet is to add games. So right. It allows you to just add them without having to go into one of the admin interfaces to go and do that, which is kind of fun. And that is what got me thinking about early websites. So for instance, Club Overclocker, that's the site you were affiliated with before you came over to the red side at Team Ninja Lane. NinjaLane.com, HardwareAsylum.com, and just about every other hardware review site and other sites out there that were on the web. They all had this very same formula that I can trace back to the way BBSs were set up.
Oh, how so?
So for instance, on NinjaLane.com, I had a news section where I would go and post news. And a lot of times it was just links to other reviews that you can go check out or something fancy that was happening at NVIDIA or a new processor from Intel. That was, in BBS terms, that was the bulletin.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. That's exactly right. And we still do that today on our side, although not as much as we used to.
Not as much as I probably should. And I really need to work on that. But one of the other aspects that I added to my website because I thought I needed it because everybody else had one was a message forum.
Oh, yeah. The forums.
Yeah. So I created the Ninja Lane message forum, and then later was the Hardware Asylum message forum because I can't think of a good catchy name for this kind of stuff. But the idea with a message forum was to create community. So you would have people come to your website to go and post messages and send, you know, whatever out, share files, share pictures. And it was the idea that it would create a community of people that really liked what Hardware Asylum and Ninja Lane stood for. Well, every other website on the web had one of those things. So if you went to Club Overclocker, you could go and talk about overclocking. You could go to overclock.net, do the exact same thing. You could go to Extreme Systems and talk about system builds and overclocking. Every website kind of had its own little niche, its own little cliques of people. And there was folks that migrated between each one of those sites to create more community, so to speak.
Well, one of the things that you haven't touched on that seems impossible today is that originally BBSs, because of the nature of dial-up, were very localized. So, you know, you didn't call long distance to BBSs very often because it was expensive.
Well, yeah, you had to pay your phone charges.
So it created almost a sense of community all by itself. I mean, when we are in Boise, we dial into the Boise BBSs. Mm-hmm. And if you were of that sort when you traveled, it was kind of fun to see if you could discover any BBSs in the area you were in. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the technology back in those days made that not very easy to do, which added to the appeal a little bit. I can still remember some late night sessions where we were abusing long distance trying to find, you know, out of the country BBSs that might have interesting content, which is, you know, maybe a story for another time.
Well, and all you had to do is really just create a login. And BBSs back then requested a lot of personal information, but nobody ever really gave their real name in a lot of cases. So you just kind of create something. And the only way that they could trace back to you was looking at your phone number. Well, if you weren't home or if you were at a payphone, it didn't really matter. So there was a bit of anonymity, even though a BBS in its nature was, well, we want to have this community. We want to know who's connected in some cases, they require that you say, hey, how did you hear about us? The sysop will go and look at that message and say, oh, well, he knows this guy or he has this right passphrase, so I'm going to let them in.
Well, you draw a very interesting parallel, maybe with what we would call the dark web these days. Mm-hmm. You know, we had bulletin board systems that existed, but they weren't advertised. And it was almost like a private club, the velvet rope experience, right?
Oh, of course.
So you had to know somebody that even knew the bulletin board existed to get on it, mm-hmm. or maybe even be recommended to get in. And, you know, we had sites like that here in town. I ran a site for a while that was like that. It was a referral-only site. And I remember working very hard to get into a very private site at one point, which required you to really jump through some hoops and know some folks to even be able to log in.
Yeah, the private club. Hey, knock four times and spin around three and...
Oh, ridiculous stuff. Yeah. And we don't have that so much today, or at least the average user experience doesn't include that.
Well, no, it's because we have a Facebook mentality for websites, which ironically, the early versions of Facebook were almost a mirror of what a BBS was. So you had your news and you could interact with friends. You could play, you know, Farmville or Pimp Wars. You could play these games. Now, they weren't text-based like what they were on BBSs. They were flash-based. But the concept of why the site was creating a community and how that community interacted was almost identical to the way a BBS was. And it really kind of made me think, well, it was the early internet, even though it was dial-up. And then when we got onto the internet and realized, hey, we can build websites that are more than just technical papers on how to connect telescopes across three different continents.
Right.
Now we can actually create fun things. Early in my web development career, I would look at other websites and say, oh, well, I want to imitate what this site's doing. And I figured, well, that's kind of the standard. Let's just do that. So that's why I figured I needed to have a message forum. And for a while it worked. These days, everybody's kind of moved to social media and Twitter and whatnot, which again, another place to go to have your community interaction. And now instead of it being distributed across a number of websites, you go to just one place.
Yeah, and that's a good point because websites really are more interest-centric, I guess. Mm-hmm. And there are exceptions, but even if you take some of the big boys like Reddit, for example, really is just a BBS-style message board at heart.
Yeah, it is. Really. Yeah, you have a lot of your chat about this picture they got posted or chat about the latest political thing, and you have these different rooms that you can go to and make your discussion points known.
So bulletin boards, I think, are really an interesting retro project. But tell us more specifically, what are you doing with your BBS? Is this something you plan to release? Is this members only? Should we be keeping it on the down low?
Well, it's already on the podcast, so it's not really in the down low anymore. My intention for creating a BBS is one, to kind of explore something that really interests me as a kid. And all of a sudden, it's making this resurgence. As part of my retro projects, I want to have kind of a retro network, and then I want to be able to connect to old-timey kind of sites. So I have an old version of ninjalane.com, for instance, that I can view from Windows 3.1. You know, it doesn't have all the JavaScript. It doesn't have all the HTML5. It's just kind of table-based with standard images.
Right.
Kind of the way that old websites were. Well, I found that while I can download files from, you know, my local file server, I really wanted to have this way to share outside of my network. And I can't necessarily do that on the open web because Windows 3.1 cannot surf the open web anymore. It's just too advanced for an old machine like that. So I was looking at a BBS to the point where I can create like this retro Ninja Lane hub, so to speak, that you can kind of log into. You can play some games. You can post some messages. Maybe I can link into some of the articles on Hardware Asylum and post those in as I don't know, bulletins or articles that you can read.
Right.
Read the latest power supply review on this BBS.
So. I don't know. We could dig some old reviews out of the Wayback Machine, right? That fits the retro thing.
Oh, yeah. That'd be kind of fun. And then I figured also I could have a file repository for all of these drivers that I have just kind of amassed so that I can build some of these retro machines. So I can have maybe all of the files required to set up the classic case build, for instance. So that particular build required some drivers to run the RLL hard drive and some configuration knowledge for setting that machine up. So I can go and post that and have that all in one central location. Of course, I could post that on hardwareasylum.com, but it doesn't really necessarily fit with the latest Z690 overclocked motherboard, so to speak.
Okay.
On top of that, I'm a bit of an artist. You know, I've kind of mentioned that off and on. But the one type of art that I never got to explore was ANSI art or ASCII art. And that has always interested me. It's kind of cartoony. It's really, really simple. But it's also complex in its simplicity, if that makes any sense at all. So we have squares and texture tiles that go and create a screen. So you have a red, and then you have a screen over top of it, and all of a sudden it turns a darker shade of red that you can't get that color in ANSI because you only have 16 colors to pick from. So you do that by manipulating these shades or these halftones over top of it. And that's something that you can do really easily in Photoshop. But when you're drawing ANSI art, you have to do it square by square by square. So you really have to plan out what it is that you want to draw and how you want to draw it to be able to create the picture. And that's a challenge that I think is really interesting.
Well, if I don't recall too badly, I think I remember that there were animated versions too. I remember looking forward to when new releases came out from some of the demo teams, right? They always had interesting 8-bit music and crazy simple animations. And it was almost like you were waiting for a new TV show on Netflix today. You know, what are these guys going to come up with next? How are they going to push that envelope? So it'd be interesting to see what you can do.
Well, and that is where I would probably have to draw the line because I wouldn't have enough time to dedicate to go and create something like that and still be able to run, you know, the Hardware Asylum podcast or hardwareasylum.com or the YouTube channel. But it is something that I kind of want to dabble with. So maybe we'll see what happens. And if I can figure out an automated way of getting content into it so I don't actually have to create it within the BBS system, that would make it a little bit easier and make it a little bit more automated. And at least give you one other place of the 2,000 other BBSs that are still active in the world that you can come to and check out my unique spin on how to set up retro machines.
Well, I have a suspicion that many of our listeners probably have never experienced a BBS and might be intrigued by at least the concept of BBS doors. So,
oh, yeah. Door games. Door games are really fun because, you know, they might get boring, but if you really start to play the game it's supposed to be played, it gets really engaging, especially if you're only in it for like 10 minutes and you say, you play it for 10 minutes and then you get kicked off. And then when you come back the next day, it's like, all right, what do I need to do? Where do I need to go? What sources of resources do I need? Why do I only have 20 coins now when I had 200 when I logged out? That sort of stuff. These days, we take it for granted where we would log into like Borderlands, for instance. You would know immediately where you left off based off of where you were. You could have like 5 character saves. You log in, I'm in Sanctuary, and I need to go and travel to this place because I can see that that's what's next on my list. Well, you didn't have that sort of luxury playing these door games. It really was a choose-your-own-adventure.
Well, I'm definitely intrigued. I look forward to seeing if we can get this thing running enough, we can release it on the masses.
Oh, yeah. Maybe we can download some of that anime stuff out of Japan that's all bootleg and stuff, right?
That's, again, another story for another day. Well, hey, we'll have to touch back in, and if you're listening, stay posted. Who knows when and if we'll be able to get some sort of Hardware Asylum BBS live for you to try yourselves.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS and follow us on Twitter. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2022. Thanks for listening.